So happy to have you listening in here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. One of my favorite things, and there's, I'm telling you, there's never a day goes by, but we don't, I don't look at that and use it almost every day, is a bottle of maple syrup that we have in our refrigerator. We're constantly refreshing and buying it. Pretty often for me, it's if we have any vanilla ice cream in the house, a little maple syrup on top of that vanilla ice cream is really, really good and the way to go. I want to talk with you today. Actually, my guest will, Teresa Maroney, about maple syrup. She has a new book out. It's called Modern Maple, and she is actually the author of several books about cooking with nature's bounty, and her most recent, Modern Maple, is full of recipes that are just going to make your mouth water. We have a couple of them posted up on my Facebook page, red cabbage and berry salad, and also baby back ribs with maple glaze. Oh, man, I'm so hungry. She's joining us today from the studios of Minnesota Public Radio. Teresa, you there?
I'm right here, Larry.
Thanks a lot for taking time to be with us. Oh, you come up with all these wonderful recipes. The titles.
Well, we're gonna get you off of the straight ice cream run there that you're on. Lots more to do with it.
Yeah, I'm telling you. Well, of course, it finds its way onto our pancakes and our waffles and all that too. But I tell you, in the evening, there's nothing like a little scoop of ice cream and a little bit of maple syrup right on top of it. You ever do that?
Oh, yeah, I'm with you on that. I love it, and I love it on pancakes, but it's just surprising how many other things it goes with, and I really enjoyed exploring some of those, you know, as you mentioned, the red cabbage and berry salad and the baby back ribs and just some things that people might not think about, and it's maple is a tremendous seasoning as well as the sweet stuff that we think of it for.
I'm glad that you started the book with a little bit of history and talking about the Native Americans and their use, early ones' use of maple syrup, and then how it's made, which I think is cool too.
Well, it's particularly interesting to, if you've ever spent time, I don't know, have you ever been in a sugar bush, a modern day sugar bush,
where
you do it?
Oh yeah.
Okay, so you know how it is. It's a lot of work out there. I mean, you're hauling sap and you're hauling wood and you're standing around burning and eating bratwurst and all those things that go with it. And I think back to the Indians, you know, the Ojibwe and the Ho-Chunk and everybody that used to do it up in this area since before the coming of the white man. And they carried that sap in little one-quart birch bark dishes that they made, you know, through the snowy woods, through the hummocks and tripping on roots. And they, you know, they didn't even have, at the beginning, they didn't even have metal buckets to boil it in. They just put hot rocks into birch bark containers and boiled off the excess. I mean, it's hard work now. I can't imagine how they did it in those days. It really boggles my mind. And to see those old pictures, just they just fascinate me. I could look at them all day.
It's wonderful. And as you said in the book, they used maple syrup. They didn't have salt or didn't use a salt if they had it. Maple syrup was kind of used in some ways in place of salt in a way.
It was. And even into the 1920s when there's an ethnographer named Francis Densmore who spent a great deal of time with the Ojibwe in northern Minnesota primarily, and they didn't have any salt at that point. And even up to as late as the 1940s, there are reports that some of the elders, the Ojibwe elders, said that they never did get the taste for salt. They just never learned how to use it. And even in the 1940s, they weren't using it, and they didn't understand the fascination with it. And that they said that they would, in the traditional Ojibwe culture, they would use as much maple sugar as the white man now uses salt. It was really a dominant seasoning because they didn't have any source of salt back in those days, not the Indians in this area. On the East Coast, some of the syrup-making tribes did also have access to salt, but that didn't stop them from using the maple sugar as a dominant seasoning as well. So it's been a very big deal.
And they, rather than have the syrup, they would make it crystalline because it was easier to carry around.
Right. They were a somewhat nomadic. That's not maybe the right word, but they moved around a lot. They moved from their hunting camps in the fall to their fishing grounds in the spring and their sugaring camps in the winter. And they kind of moved around a lot. And if you've ever carried a lot of maple syrup, it's kind of heavy, and it also, they didn't have refrigerators, of course, and so it doesn't keep that well without refrigeration, so it would mold. So they would cook it further down, and if you catch it at just the right stage, you cook it, you know, quite a bit more than it takes to turn it into syrup, it starts to get thick, and right then they would pour it into a big wooden trough and stir it like crazy with a big maple paddle and beat it until it crystallized into sugar. And that's what they could, that's what they could carry. It was easy to carry. They could pack it into these what are called birch bark McCooks, which is a big birch bark container, and they could actually bury that in the ground and then come later in the year and dig it up, and there it would be.
Yeah, and reconstitute it a bit if they wanted.
Yes, they did. They used to use that, you know, they would mix it with water to make a beverage, or they would do whatever they had to do, or they would just put it into stews or put it on fish or whatever they wanted to do with it. But it was much more versatile as the sugar, and it took up less room.
Well, I'm certainly enjoying your book. And let me just turn to the audience for a minute. Teresa Maroney is our guest today, author of Modern Maple. It's a wonderful recipe book. I'm telling you, it's published by Minnesota Historical Society Press, by the way. And I'm wondering if you, have you made your own maple syrup? Do you have a favorite recipe that uses maple syrup? We'd love, you know, I'm sure that Teresa Maroney would love, you know, she might say, well, oh, gosh, I'm going to keep that for another book, that recipe or that idea at least. And she's going to be sharing with you. Give us a call with your own experiences or questions at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Email us, talk@wpr.org, or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or comment, or maybe you've got a photo from your sugar bush. We'd love to see that. I had a friend who had a pretty big one in sort of the Eau Claire, kind of in the Eau Claire area. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, how do you measure the success of a year? And he says, well, I usually figure it by the number of cases of beer I go through. The more cases of beer, he said, you know, you might have a 30 case year or you might have a 10 case year. And the 30 case year would be where you had a lot of maple syrup and there'd be a lot of people helping.
That's a good way to measure the thing. That's great. That's funny.
Oh, man. So anyway, we're in the Maple Belt. Hey, Minnesota, Wisconsin?
Just barely. Minnesota is as far west as it can be made. It's something that a lot of people don't know, Larry, and to me it's, I mean, I know this stuff, but a lot of people don't know that maple syrup is produced only, all the maple syrup in the entire world is produced on a narrow band that straddles the U.S.-Canada border from the Atlantic to western Minnesota, and that's it. There is no more maple syrup in the world anywhere because the conditions don't exist for it to be made.
Wow, isn't that amazing? And what are the conditions?
It is amazing. Well, we have to have the right kind of trees, and, you know, although the sugar maple is, that's the most famous one and the one that's used the most, it grows all the way down to Georgia. But what they're lacking is, A, the proper soil and all that stuff, but what they're really lacking is the freeze-thaw cycle, which is absolutely required to get the syrup pumping. It has to be maybe 40, 45 during the day and down to perhaps 20 at night for the prime part of the season. And this year we're running, it's so cold this year in this area that we're running late on the season, but it's a far improvement over last year where we were already in the 80s by now.
Yeah, which was
so
really...
That was just crazy, and everybody lost production. In fact, in Minnesota, Wisconsin, they didn't get hardly anything at all last year, and even Vermont was down 30% last year, and you know, it was a very bad year. Now this year, it's the opposite story. We've got our taps in, and we're sitting there waiting for the first drip. I mean, it is starting to go now, but it just started.
Well, Ralph in Wisconsin deals with us right now, and he's in the process, I think. Ralph, hi.
Hi. I'm outside right now cooking down my sugar maple sap.
Oh, I'll be right over, Ralph. How much are you getting right now?
Well, I'm averaging only 2 to 4 gallons a day. I got 7 one day, but that was unusual. Because
how many trees do you have tapped?
27.
20, okay.
27, yeah.
I just do it for my own use and my family. But I have a question regarding, I read an article in Countryside Magazine, in which they said you could use the sap directly to make coffee instead of putting the water in, put the sap. Have you tried that? Is that something I should try?
You know what? I have tried that, and I'm not a big fan of that particular thing, but what I do like to do with sap is use it to make tea. Now, I think that works much better than coffee, but yes, I have done sap directly in coffee, but it's much better with tea, and I've also used it as the cooking water for rice.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, I'll try that.
If you think about it, you can kind of imagine that, but it's absolutely great to use to make to brew tea. With the coffee, I like to add, my husband actually discovered this, he was making some cappuccino, and instead of putting in the vanilla syrup that he usually used to put in, he put in a shot of maple syrup, and that was really good, but that had already been cooked and caramelized, and I found that when I made the coffee with it, it was more, I don't know, it was just kind of a little annoyingly sweet, but it didn't have any of the maple, so I would try it with tea. It's really good that way.
Yeah. And you just boil it on the stove then until...
Yep, and just brew your tea bags in there, and it can be, you know, Darjeeling or any kind of tea you want, or herbal tea. It just makes a very nice tea.
I had the state forester go through my woods, and he pointed out my silver maples and asked me if I was tapping them, and I said, no, I hadn't even thought of it. And he said, well, you try that. And he also said that box elder was a good one to try, so... Last 4 years now, I've been tapping, and it's a wonderful experience. I'm retired, so it gives me a chance to be outside and use up some of the woods.
It's fun, and I've tapped silver maple myself, and I actually got better production out of my silver maple than out of a sugar maple that was right across the sidewalk. So I definitely go for those silvers, and I know people that tap box elders as well, which are a maple. So.
Ralph, I thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call very much. Talking today with Teresa Maroney, we're going to get into some of her recipes. Her book is titled Modern Maple, and you're going to enjoy learning some more about maple syrup and those recipes, too. Stay with us. There's nothing quite like a stack of steaming, fluffy pancakes drizzled with pure maple syrup to get your mouth watering. But there are many other ways to enjoy maple syrup as well. Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today on the Ideas Network. What about Northwoods Eggs Benedict or Stars of the North Wild Rice Salad? Maple syrup can add a wonderful depth and flavor to savory dishes as well. And Teresa Maroney, the author of Modern Maple, is our guest today. And she's here to share some great recipes using maple syrup and talk about how little the process of making syrup has changed over the centuries. You may have a favorite recipe to talk about or share a question about maple syrup. Call us at 1-800-642-1234. Or go to my Facebook page, at The Larry Mueller Show. Post a question, comment, photo there. Click like while you're there. We'll send you regular updates on upcoming show topics. Maple syrup, isn't it great? Not only does it satisfy your sweet tooth, but it adds a flavor that can't be beat. Larry Mueller here. Not only is maple syrup great in sweet dishes, it adds a lot to savory dishes as well. We're talking about how to use the syrup, but also about the process of making your own as well with Teresa Maroney, author of several books about cooking with Nature's Bounty, and her most recent is Modern Maple. She joins us from the studios of Minnesota Public Radio. Teresa, thanks again for taking time to be with us today. Really appreciate it.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
It's your book is just what you have so many wonderful sounding recipes, and I'm admitting I haven't tried a single one yet. I just got the book recently here, but roasted maple glazed carrot sounds good to me. And
that's very good.
Pork tenderloin with rhubarb maple sauce and cheese grits.
Maple goes with things you might not think of, including rhubarb. Now, if you think about rhubarb, it can use a little help in the sweetness department, so that's kind of a natural pairing. But bacon goes with maple really great. That's what I was about to say. What doesn't go with bacon, right?
No.
But maple goes really well with a lot of pork, salmon, fish, those sorts of things, that kind of fish that has a dominant flavor, such as salmon and trout, goes really well with maple. And it goes surprisingly well with spices such as Szechuan peppercorn, black peppercorn, mustard, herbs such as thyme, sage. It's amazing what you can do with maple once you start playing around with it.
Absolutely. Rob in Wauwatosa, thanks for waiting, by the way. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Appreciate your call.
It's quite timely because I tapped two trees in my yard for the first time ever just last night, as a matter of fact, and I feel kind of like a little kid because it's the art of discovery when all of a sudden the sap starts flowing, and I've got this great couple of buckets of sap already, so it's really very, very exciting.
Oh, you hit it at just the right time, Rob. Because
I certainly did.
Yep. You really did. It's just now starting up here, so that's just great that you are doing that.
After the first night, I had about 2.5 gallons already, so it's very exciting.
Great.
My question is, how long can you keep the sap before you start cooking it down, and do you just cook one batch at a time, or can you just continue to add and just keep cooking it down? What's the best process for that?
Okay, great questions. If it's cold as it is right now, you can put, you know, if you've got your sap in jugs or something, you can put them in a shady area next to the house, as long as it's, you know, if there's a little bit of snow or something, it'll keep them cold. You don't want to keep it for more than a couple of days before you boil it, because it will, there's bacteria in there that will start to grow. It sounds like you're going to be able to go straight into a boil within a day, so you should be fine. If for some reason the sap flow stops and you don't have enough to boil, you can freeze it until you're ready to go.
Oh.
Yeah, right. That works really well. It takes a long time to thaw, but, you know, it does work. And then once you start your boil, if the trees are producing the day that you're boiling, you can continue to add sap to it to keep your pot full, you know, as the sap goes. Generally, you don't want to boil with anything less than 5 gallons, because you're going to end up with maybe a pint of finished syrup out of that. And if you start with less than 5 gallons, you know, you just can't finish a boil with anything less than a pint. It's just not enough to make it worth it. So you need at least 5 gallons. But once you start with that 5 gallons and your pot is down to, say, 2.5 gallons, and you've got a tree that's kicked out another gallon, well, go ahead and dump it in there. That doesn't hurt anything at all. Just keep it going. And when the thing gets down to the point where it starts to pick up a little bit of color, then you can strain it and put it into the smaller pot that you'll use to finish it inside. I do all of my primary boiling outside, and you should too.
Okay.
All right.
Great. Thanks for the help.
Yeah, thanks, Rob, for calling. Paul in Wauwatosa, hello to you.
Hello. How are you?
Great. Thanks for calling. And you've been doing this for a while.
I've been doing this 30 years as a hobby. Started exactly like the fellow who just called from Wauwatosa.
Yeah.
Made a pint the first time, and now, depending on the year, anywhere from 3 to 12 gallons.
Oh,
good for you. How many trees do you tap?
I 25 to 50. As I get older, the number of trees goes down. People don't realize the physical work of maple syruping. I have friends who let me use their woods, and then you have to cart it out of the woods. And like this year, there's 2 feet of snow. I had two
a lot of work.
I've read tons of books on maple syruping, and I've made every mistake you can make in maple syruping. I cannot for all the world understand how Native Americans before metal could make any maple syrup. I tried it with stones once. There isn't enough time in the year.
It's amazing. A lot of what they did, I believe that, our records back to those days, obviously there aren't very many, but the Native Americans have a pretty good oral tradition, so we do know some of what they did before they had metal. One of the things that they did is they let the sap freeze, get a skin of ice, and if you pull off the skin of ice, the sugar content prevents the liquid from freezing. So what freezes doesn't have the sugar in it. So you can pull off the skin of ice, and what's left is sweeter than what you pulled off. And if you do that enough times, you do start to reduce it. So the boiling is, you might not have to boil off the full 40 to 1, because you might have gotten some of the just the plain water out by freezing.
You wonder who figured this out to begin with.
Well, think about the first person that ate an oyster. I mean, that's a brave individual. I don't know how anybody comes up with this stuff.
Paul, thanks. I want to give Myron in Luxembourg a chance to join in, too. Myron, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thanks so much. We also have a group of friends, three of us, who that we truck our sap together. We've been doing this for about 25, 30 years. We tap about 15 to 20 trees, and we've been boiling. And the question I've got is, it seems like this early sap that we've been doing it for about 2 weeks now, and it stopped for about a week, but the early sap seemed to have a much higher sugar content, in that the old ratio of 40 gallons to one didn't seem to apply. We got more finished syrup out of fewer gallons of sap. Is that true, that early sap would yield a higher ratio of syrup?
I think
in
that's
general,
true.
Yes, that is true. And there, you also bring up something, Myron, that's an interesting point for people to know. The syrup changes over the course of the season, even from the same trees, from the same sugar bush, it will change in color because it's at the beginning of the season, as you experienced, the sap is a little sweeter. You don't have to cook it as long, so it doesn't get as much of that caramelization, the Maillard reaction. So the finished syrup is more pale. It's more like Chablis or, you know, some kind of white wine. It's quite pale. And then at the end of the, you know, as the season progresses, the sap is picking up more minerals. It's also kind of moving faster, so it's not picking as much sugar. So we have to cook it longer. So the sap cooks down into a darker syrup as the season progresses. And, you know, near the end of the season, you get the darker type of syrup that you're used to seeing at the store. And at the very end of the season, you get what's called grade B, which is almost as dark as molasses. And it didn't used to be available commercially for people to buy, but you can find it in limited places now. And that stuff is so maple-y that you could never put it on pancakes. It would just overwhelm them because it's so strong. But it's great for cooking because it has tremendous maple flavor without as much liquid. But, yeah, the sugar content does change, and that's why the color of the syrup produced throughout the season changes, too. That's a good observation.
Yeah. We also make our maple sugaring a social occasion. We had our sugar camp party just this Sunday, and we had all our friends over, and we had enough sap to boil. It hadn't been running for a couple days, but we had some frozen sap from the week before. And so we had a great time. It's a nice time to get everyone outdoors and get together.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, it's the most fun in the world. I just love going to a sugar camp for a boil and hanging around eating bratwurst and drinking beer and telling stories and watching the stars. You know, it's how can you get any better than that?
There you go, Myron. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Appreciate the call. Bye. And Lynn in Marengo. Hello to you.
Well, hello, Larry, and I listen to your show every day. I absolutely love it, and when you start talking about food, I can actually see your mouth water.
Well, it's watering right now, I can tell you that, Len.
Well, I've got a recipe. You know, you talked about having maple syrup glaze on ham and everything, fish, and I've made a maple syrup glaze for smoked salmon. But the one I really like is every year, I usually get a deer every year, and I take and bone out the deer muscle. I don't cut them in little steaks. And I take that muscle and I rub it with ham bouillon, the granulated ham bouillon.
Yep. Okay.
I put it on the grill. And then when it starts to weep the fluid out, then I start basting it with maple syrup and bacon drippings.
Oh, my gosh.
And, I save all my bacon drippings.
Oh.
And then when I need to do a little baste, I mix a little maple syrup with it. And, I don't know that they have maple syrup in heaven, but I would imagine that after you taste it, you will.
That just sounds fantastic, Lynn. What a great recipe. Well, I can absolutely see it.
Well, you keep rolling it and keep basting it. And then when it gets to 135 degrees, take it off. And set it aside and cover it and let it set for 10, 15 minutes and then enjoy.
And when are we having this? This just sounds so good.
Oh, man.
I'm getting in the car.
Well, it's coming up here pretty soon. I got a friend that that taps and he just started this weekend.
It's just now getting going. So.
Yeah.
Thanks, Lynn.
Yep.
Oh, man.
Doesn't that sound great?
Oh. And then here we get. I think another caller, actually, Carla, who's from Minnesota, has a maple truffle recipe.
Oh.
Truffles with maple syrup. Oh, man.
Does that sound good?
Couple of cups of maple syrup and a cup of whole cream, a little powdered sugar, and some chocolate. And you can make these truffles. And Judith, we've got that up on the Facebook page, right? Yeah, Judith has posted that recipe on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, along with two of your recipes from the book. I mentioned that earlier. The red cabbage and berry salad, which sounded just great to me.
Mm-hmm.
And even more so, those ribs.
The baby back ribs with maple glaze.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you've got pictures of those on your Facebook page, too.
Yes.
I believe we did send pictures of that. Yeah. Yeah, if somebody can look at those and not get hungry, well, better check your pulse.
You got that right. I wholeheartedly agree with you. And you've got maple syrup. I mean, you can use maple syrup in pretty much everything. You've got the history to begin with, but then you've got it in snacks and appetizers, soup, salads, and sandwiches, vegetables, breads, main dishes, beverages, and desserts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I even have some homemade specialties in there, such as how to home smoke maple bacon on your Weber kettle grill or your kettle grill, something that most people aren't aware you can do, but it's surprisingly easy. And a lot of the best bacon you buy is cured with maple, as you know. And it's pretty easy to find pork belly these days in a good grocery store or a specialty store, and you can make your own home-smoked maple bacon in a couple of hours.
Oh.
It's amazing to try it. Yeah.
Oh, so. I'm gonna try that. I've got your book right here, and I'm taking it home with me. Dennis in Green Bay has a question or comment. Hi, Dennis.
Hello. I'm just wondering, to get started, what kind of supplies do you need and where would you find them?
Oh, to get started with collecting maple syrup, you mean?
Yes.
Making your own?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, you can buy those blue bags, which is what you see all over the place, and those work great, but they're like $10 a bag. What I do, and that's fine, you can use those, they're great, but what I do is I go to the hardware store and I buy half-inch plumbing pipe, either copper or PVC, and I cut it into, 4-inch lengths or something like that. And that is what I use for my tapping spile. And then I take a a 5/8 inch spade bit, drill the tree, maybe an inch and a half deep, slight upward angle. And I then rinse out the hole and get the sawdust out of it. And I stick the piece of copper or PVC plumbing pipe in there. If it doesn't fit tight enough, you can wrap a little duct tape around the end. Everybody's got duct tape around, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you tap that into the tree, and then I take a plastic 1-gallon water jug or milk jug that's been cleaned out really well, cut a little hole that the spile, the copper tube, will fit through, and then I push that over the copper tube. I wrap a piece of stiff wire around the neck of the 1-gallon jug and pound a nail into the tree right above the hole, and hang the jug to take the weight off the spile. That's all you need. And you can start with that. That's how I started. And as the sap starts to really flow, you can get some plastic tubing, some flexible plastic tubing, a couple feet of that at a winemaking supply store or other places. Put that over the copper spile. Run that down into a clean pickle pail or a camping water jug or something, and collect bigger quantities of sap that way. And that's the best way to start. You don't need fancy equipment to do it. A couple bucks at the hardware and you're good to go.
And you've got that all. You've got nice photos and everything right in your book, too.
I do explain that full tapping procedure in the back of Modern Maple. I put in a section on how to make maple syrup in your backyard with like one or two trees, and you'll still get enough syrup at the end to make it worth doing. But, when you're first starting out, you don't really want to go spend a whole bunch of money on expensive supplies and things like that. You just need something to get started. And then the main thing that I would tell you is be sure and do your primary boil outside, because even if you've only got 5 gallons of sap, you'll end up with a pint of syrup or something like that. But you're driving off 4.5 gallons of water. And if you do that in your kitchen, it can be a real mess. I've talked with people in the... Yeah, I mean, it's real sticky steam. Yeah, and they've done it and said, oh my gosh, we had to re-wallpaper. Because
sticky steam.
Yes, sticky steam, and it can make a real mess. So you do your primary boil outside. I use a turkey fryer, one of those propane turkey fryers that they use outside for frying turkeys, and a big 5-gallon pot on top of that. And then I strain it through an old clean cotton T-shirt and bring it inside and do the finishing boil inside. It works great. You can use a hot plate outside or whatever you can come up with.
All right. How far up on the tree do you drill the initial hole?
Depends on your height. Really, I drill it at a height that's comfortable for you. That's the most important thing. I would put my first tap in the tree, I would put it on the south side of the tree, because you're going to get a little bit more action probably off of that southern exposure. And a lot of people say it should be right above a major root of the tree or right below a major branch of the tree. I've never really experienced a difference in that. And when commercial operations do their tapping, they don't really worry about that. They just put it at a convenient height. And each year, when you tap the same tree next year, you have to move at least 5 or 6 inches away from the previous hole, either up or down or off to the side. So, but the height doesn't really matter.
Once you pull the tap, what, do you plug that hole in at the end of the year?
I don't know. It'll usually when you pull the tap, the tree will have stopped dripping. You can look up and you'll see the buds on the tree, and the sap that will come out then is what's called buddy, and it gets dark and the sap is bitter, and at that point you're done. You can pull the taps. It might continue to dribble a little bit, but it heals pretty quickly. So, no, I don't put anything in there to plug it. And the next year you'll see like a little belly button, I like to call it, over the last year's hole. So you know where you drilled, you can see it. And by the third year, the thing is pretty much completely healed over. It doesn't hurt the tree at all. So no, you don't need to plug the hole. In fact, you shouldn't. You should just let it grow naturally back together, and it'll eventually get covered again with bark.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Dick in Waukesha, hi.
In Waukesha, yes. I was down at the farmer's market last year, and there was a woman there from Medford was selling maple syrup, she said. And I asked her how much sap she got, 40,000 gallons normally. Last year, they got 2,000 and made syrup out of that. And I bought a small bottle of it and took a swig of it, and it was clear and it's sweet, but it didn't taste anything like maple syrup to me.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Oh, that's interesting, because, you know, in order to be considered maple syrup, there's a certain sugar concentration that is required at 66%, and we do that by temperature, by taking the temperature of the syrup. And, I mean, it's pretty hard to make – you can't make syrup without doing that. And there is a big difference in – not well, it's not that big, but there's a difference in the flavor of syrup from place to place. It does have its own terroir, just like honey does, or – other fruits or vegetables or something taste different depending on the soil. So you do sometimes encounter variations in flavor, but it usually is pretty darn sweet still. Now, last year was such a challenge. Oh, yeah, I'll bet it was. But you know, the other thing is it depends on what she used to cook it. If she was using wood, you're going to get a different flavor than if she was using propane. So you might be more accustomed to the wood smoke flavor of syrup, and she might have been using propane, so you would be lacking that smoky flavor that syrup often has.
Yeah, good point. Good point.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dick, for calling. Appreciate it. And Teresa, this is a lot of fun. Do you have a favorite? What's your favorite recipe in your book? You have one?
The one I'm eating right now. I mean, not literally right now, but they're really great.
Good looking. Yeah, I really like grilled camembert and pear sandwich with maple syrup.
Now that's one that I would have said is a real winner. That's a great one. I really like that Stars of the North wild rice salad. It focuses on ingredients that are indigenous to our area, and it has hazelnuts, wild rice, cranberries, most of which in the world come from Wisconsin, as you probably know.
Yep.
And it's got apples and ramps, and if you can't get ramps, you can use green onions, but it's all local ingredients, and it's just a wonderful thing. Some of the salads are just fantastic in that book, if I say so myself.
And you mentioned, we mentioned bacon, so I got to go back to bacon-infused bourbon with maple.
Oh
my goodness.
You should try that.
I'm going to give
that a
try.
If you're a bourbon drinker, that's one to try. That's really, but the other one, if you're a bacon hound, which, like I say, almost who isn't, but is the candied bacon recipe where you take strips of bacon and you par cook them for a little bit in the oven, and then you take them out and you brush them with maple syrup, cook them a little bit more, flip them and brush them a few times, and the outside of the bacon, the bacon gets crisp and sticky and coated with with
you're
maple.
You're making me hungry.
Oh, I know. It's just tremendous. It's just great.
Teresa.
That's one of the best.
Oh, we're out of time. Thank you so much. for being with us today. I really appreciate it. I had a lot of fun, and I'm really looking forward to trying the recipes in your book. Appreciate it.
Okay. Well, I hope you enjoy it, and thanks for having me.
Teresa Maroney, her last name, by the way, is spelled M-A-R-R-O-N-E. And her book is titled Modern Maple, and it's published by Minnesota Historical Society Press. Great book. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.